Esha dharma britam shechto.
Esha dharma britam shechto.
Lokam dharme nuvartayan.
Lokam dharme nuvartayan.
Gopta cha dharma setunam.
Gopta cha dharma setunam.
Shasta tat paripantinam. This king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best. He's the best amongst those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and the atheistic. So here, just word for word, short form, it's saying here, Sreshta, the best, Dharme Anuvartayan, of those who follow the religious principles, Gopta, the protector, Dharma Setu Nam, the principles of religion, Sasta, Sasta, the chastiser, Tat Paripantinam, those who are against the religious principles. So, purport, the duty of the king or the head of government is described very nicely in this verse. It is the duty of the governmental head to see that people strictly follow a religious life. A king should also be strict in chastising the atheists. In other words, an atheistic or godless government should never be supported by a king or governmental head, a chief. That is the test of good government. In the name of secular government, the king or governmental head remains neutral and allows people to engage in all sorts of irreligious activities. In such a state, people cannot be happy despite all economic development. However, in this age of Kali, there are no pious kings. Instead, rogues and thieves are elected to head the government. But how can the people be happy without religion and God consciousness? The rogues exact taxes from the citizens for their own sense enjoyment. And in the future, the people will be so much harassed that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they will flee from their homes and country and take shelter in the forest. However, in Kali Yuga, democratic government can be captured by Krishna conscious people, if this can be done. The general populace can be made very happy. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport. To the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 16th chapter, 4th verse, 4, 16, 4, symmetrical. Spoken in Zagreb, Croatia, in the Gornitai Temple, on the 25th of January 2008, Kristabdo, 521, Gorabdo. The holy year of our Lord Chaitanya, 521. In the presence of His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj and many assembled devotees from the Balkans. Very interesting verse. In Mahabharata, I think it's mentioned about Panchashil, there's five principles. that should be there to have a world peace. One is that, I don't remember all the five actually, but India had a meeting in about 1960s when they were being attacked by China. And they were promoting amongst Asia this Panchashil as an ancient principle, but it's very practical. So one of the principles is that you should respect the territorial division of each of the countries and not attack each other. And the other one is that everybody should follow some religion. They should believe in God. So atheism is actually banned. Unfortunately, India didn't adopt Panchashila in their constitution. But Indonesia was so impressed by it that Indonesia adopted it. And now it's in a law in Indonesia that you have to believe in God. You cannot be a citizen without believing in God. You'll be exiled. Panchashila. But what are the other three? There's five principles. But so there, you have freedom of religion. Anybody can believe in any religion. That doesn't matter. Any bona fide religion. There's Hindus, there's Christians, there's Buddhists, and there's a majority, of course, is Muslim. But for a Muslim country, they have the freedom of religion. It's very good. In fact, they're very proud of it. Because when I went there for one World Hindu Federation meeting, which was inaugurated by that time, whoever was the vice president, and he, Suharto or his father, one after him, and he was speaking about Panchashila. He was very much into this. It's like he mentioned about 10 times in his speech. Probably the only thing I could understand, Panchashila. But they translated for us. So that's because they're a multi-religion country and they want to have peace amongst all the religions. But they believe in religion. Should be religion. Should be some. Everyone should worship. So that kind of principle Prabhupada is espousing here. That it is part of the government's duty to see that people follow some religion. And because without any religion, then people won't be happy. Just by some sense gratification, people don't get happy. They get frustrated. That's an interesting. In the GBCs in North America in the 1980s had a meeting in Detroit. What was their goals? Like strategic management for the country. So then they had a goal that they wanted to become a recognized minority religion. I mean, in the first step. Because sometimes we're not, people consider us not as a real religion, but something, a sect or something. To be recognized as a minority religion, have that many followers, that politicians would respect you because you have a vote bank, you have followers. I don't know how much they followed that. That is interesting. We're not talking here about. Prabhupada said democratic government can be captured by Krishna conscious people. I mean, democracy means that people have a vote. And they can vote whoever they want. So if you have enough devotees or some devotee who's has enough of a leadership ability, then you could. Theoretically, potentially, get elected. I have a disciple who was elected to the parliament of Bolivia. And because of that, he was able to influence a lot of people and improve our, we got recognized as a religion in the country, and many good things happened just because of one member of parliament. And in India, I have an aspiring disciple who's he's head of a political party in one state for the youth wing. Just trying to think about it. But there are a few. When I was talking with my godbrother's name from America, who ran for political office? Balavanta. So he was running for House of Representatives. This is the two houses or something. And on a Krishna conscious platform. And he didn't hide that he was a Krishna conscious devotee. He called it the In God We Trust Party. Because in American dollars it says In God We Trust. At least the old dollars. So then Prabhupada, he didn't like it that didn't want the temples to campaign for him. It wasn't like temples should remain neutral, you know. They have to be apolitical. Right now we're facing a trouble because we're being accused in Bengal, in Mayapur, that we are supporting one of the political parties. But we don't actually publicly support. But members may vote for that party. It's more the pro-Hindu party has been supporting us, I would say. So they're saying that, but so we are saying that we don't officially, we have people from all the parties that we practice Krishna consciousness. It's not a problem for us. But it can be an issue. So Prabhupada didn't want us to practice, the temples should be involved in any of the political campaigning. They have to be neutral. But the devotees, the grihasthas, they can. So he had a team of grihasthas. And he got 5,000 votes. For the first time, that's pretty good. I mean, considering in this kind of those days, we didn't even have congregations. So here, Prabhupada, just hinting a little bit, if you have a Krishna conscious leadership, maybe in Croatia, future you'll have a Krishna conscious leader. Who knows? You can make the population very happy. They're trying for that, like in, there are some countries where probably they would get ahead before Croatia or Serbia or these countries. Like Mauritius, 60% of the population is Hindu. And they usually elect a Hindu prime minister. But so far, the prime ministers have been supportive, but they're not very Krishna conscious. They're Hindus. Also in Guyana, they have about 50-50, I think, the former African and the Hindus. Those Prabhupada told those countries that they should have a Krishna conscious situation. In Manipur, the people are basically Vaishnavas, but they're not all vegetarians. On the street, all the ladies wear tilak. Their religion is Vaishnav, not Hindu. I mean, per se, not generally, but they call themselves we're Vaishnavas. Since that king, 400-500 years ago, was initiated by the disciple of Narottam Das Thakur. So at that time it was a totally Krishna conscious kingdom. And their cultural shows are this Rasa Leela. Although they are very much Kshatriya oriented, most of the people are called Singh. Like Subhadamadhar Maharaj was Todam Singh. Singh means like a lion. So they are, in fact, the Japanese, when they were going through Asia, they had conquered, you know, Indochina, conquered Malaysia, Singapore, conquered Myanmar, Burma, and they were just attacking India, and they got up as far as Manipur, and that was it. The Manipuris are like Nepalis, kind of, in the sense that they're great warriors. So many Japanese go to see their forefathers' graves in Manipur. They worship the forefathers of Shinto religion. So, but today, of course, people, they feel that freedom of religion means also freedom to be an atheist. So this Panchashila, even in America, that people regularly go to court and say that In God We Trust should be taken out of the money. So far they failed. But sometimes they wish to have prayers in the schools or a moment of silence where everybody could pray. And the atheist Buddha has also got a court order stopping that, that this is, government should not interfere with people's religion, because in America they have a separation of government and religion. It's two separate things. In fact, if you're a religion there, you don't have to turn in any tax returns. You're like transcendental to the government, as long as you follow the civic laws. It's interesting, because they were being persecuted when they started by people left England and Europe because of religious persecution and settled in America. So that everybody was religious. But there were all these different religions that were not allowed to practice freely in Europe. The Quakers, the different... Other than the Church of England, which at that time was an English colony. So there were many others that came to America. So, but unfortunately, they don't follow Panchashila. Atheism is also allowed. But 99 or 98% of people in America believe in God, according to some poll I read. I don't know, what's the population, what's the percentage in this part of the world? Mostly people believe in God. Huh? Well, at least, you know, lips are... You know, There's a sloka in, let's say, Mukhe Veda Mane Dharma Nahi Gane. People, even in the Vedic, it says, by mouth they accept the Vedas, but practically they don't do anything. Dharma Nahi Gane. They accept it, yeah, there's God, there's religion, but practice, very weak. So that's nothing new. So that half the people, more than half, the more majority of people, they are followed like that. They accept religion, they accept God, but they don't practice much. When I was in Barnaul, in Siberia, they have a festival there. I usually go to the festival. I think this year I missed it, like here, because of the timing. They have what they call Altai region, that's the Siberian mountain range, and they have an Altai festival. So this Altai region is a region of Russia. So the lady who's the governmental head of the religious affairs of that region, she is very much favorable to everybody that's religion. She's a sort of, but she likes the Hare Krishnas, especially that the Vishnu Tattwa, who's he's the local ISKCON head there. They're trying to find some government building to give him at a low price or free. She likes me too. She told me, stay here, I'll get you Russian citizenship. Anyway, Indian's enough. So then she was telling us something interesting. She said they did a study. Which religion is the most active? How many followers of different religions who are active? So the religion there is like in Serbia is the Orthodox. That's the majority religion. So they say what they'll do is the biggest festival of the year, they'll count how many people go to church or go to that religion's temple or whatever. So for the Orthodox, I think the biggest festival is Easter, Pasquale. Easter, where for maybe the others, Christmas is bigger, but Easter is their big day. So they found that in the whole city of Barnaul, which has 600,000 people, 10,000 people went to Easter. So from that they could understand that 10,000 people are active in their religion, of that religion. And that's the biggest day. Everybody's supposed to go to church, 10,000 went out of 600,000. Although maybe 500,000 are saying that, yeah, we believe, we're Orthodox, something, you know. But actually, who goes to church? 10,000. And they said, the Hare Krishnas, 1,000 went to Janmashtami. So they said, we're 10% of the active religious practitioners in their city. Although we're only 1,000 who went, but they're using the same statistic. So then they're finding, okay, so we're 10%. So it's a good minority, no? I mean, in India, there's 16% Muslims, and they control, the last president of India was a Muslim, and they usually have a very powerful vote bank. Sometimes the democracy, there's two parties, they don't get the majority. In a democracy, you had in a parliamentary system, you had to have the majority of the parliamentary members. So sometimes say there's 200 members, one party has 90, other party has 90, 20 is by the third party. So they make coalition government. So then according to the coalition, sometimes they get to be prime minister or they get to be some big minister. Because both get that party as the in the coalition, they offer all kinds of big ministries and power. This happens in this part of the world too. Just did. So like that, you may be a minority, but have a lot of power. If you just happen to be in, you know, there's this kind of situation. So anyway, sometimes the Greens, I think in Germany, they're not a very big party, but they also, one of the governments, they were there because using that coalition. Shakti. So like that, it can happen that it can be a small government, a small party, but still have a lot of power. Then from that you get bigger and bigger, people like you. That's interesting. Probably you're mentioning a little hint. You know, in Mayapur, we do vote, I tell, because we're in a country. We're in a village, but we have 1,000 residents in our commune, in our community. So I tell everyone who's an Indian that they should all vote. Because whoever we vote for usually becomes the village leader. There's a union of 11 villages, and they have like 11,000 people. So we have 1,000 voters. It's a big number. They always come and ask us for their vote. If you don't vote, it's like you're dead. You don't exist. If you vote, then they know that that in a democracy they have how many votes, especially whenever it's before the elections, when they're going in the campaign, go and meet all the leaders and say, we'll support you. You know, but we want your support. And get some promises from them.
Yes!
They all promise everything to everybody before the election. Maybe after, you say, we voted for you, you know, whoever won, who knows. Maybe you get some permit for Rath Yatra or something. I don't know what you want for the some land for the temple. So like this, and interesting. But the main thing here is how the head of government is really keeps that people don't do irreligious things. That's what the point is here. He protects the religious principles. So there's a history in the Padma Puran about Yayati Maharaj. We have also in Bhagavatam Yayati Maharaj, but there it focuses more on his relation with his wife, his queen, a lot about that. But it goes into another details in Padma Puran that the Yayati Maharaj, his guru was a Vaishnava. And his guru asked him, that let's establish Krishna conscious program throughout the country. So he didn't do it by some law. And there's also a story about one king in Bengal from a couple hundred years ago. Not Yatis like Satyayuga. But there was a king and he made an order. Everyone had to chant Hare Krishna. At night, every night, 6 or sunset, they all had to gather and chant Hare Krishna in his kingdom. So once he went in a secret, like, you know, incognito, like dressed like an ordinary guy, and he's going around. Some low-life people were sitting around playing cards or something, you know, playing, I don't know what they do, you know, playing some kind of game. And then someone said, come on, it's getting to be that time. We gotta go and do our Hare Krishna chant. And then that's just this Narsingha Maharaj's trip, you know. That's his thing, you know. We all gotta do it because he wants it. And he's hearing them, you know. So that, unfortunately, if you just make a law that everybody should love God, it's not gonna work. Doesn't work that way. So this king found out, you know, you can tell people to chant or get together, but they may resent it or they may not really develop. So Yayati Maharaj, he didn't use that system, he didn't just make a law. But he sent out and financed preachers, Brahmins, to go around and preach and train everyone to be Krishna conscious. Voluntarily. So people, everybody started worshipping Krishna and everyone started chanting Hare Krishna and Satyayuga. But Hare Krishna is so powerful in Kali Yuga you can be Krishna conscious. What is Satyayuga? When people were chanting, they were completely freed of sins. You know, in the Satya Yuga, the previous yugas, if you thought about something bad, you'd get a karmic reaction. But in Kali Yuga, you have to do something bad. So don't do anything bad. Yamaraj is watching. Krishna is watching too. You want to send a thought, then drive it out of your mind. No, I won't do that. So such a Yati Maharaj made the whole planet God conscious. Everyone was chanting. So as a result, people didn't grow old. No sins. They all were staying young. Then their children grew up. They didn't get old either. And their grandchildren grew up. They know not get old, also nobody died. People, everybody wants this eternal life, long life. But he showed that by Krishna consciousness you can achieve a very long life. So then Indra was making a tour of his universe, his three mundos, his three worlds. And he went down to Yamalok. And the Yamadutas, they're like a fireman when there's no fire. They're all sitting around, you know. Nobody going to hell, nor torturing. All the hells are like empty. Maybe a few old customers from before, I don't know. It seemed they were pretty much without any action. So they started to heckle Indra. Oh, what kind of universe are you running here? Nobody goes to hell. What are we doing here? What's the point of giving us a position as a torturer in hell and nobody coming here? We can't do anything, you know. Normally we hear the sweet sound of screams, you know. Ah! No, nothing. It's so quiet here. What are we supposed to do? So like that, your universal government is a failure. Somehow, Indra his ego got ticked off by this. He said, you see this, Yayati Maharaj, he's completely going again, he's just overruling you and ruining the whole universal system you got made up here. So then Yayati Maharaj, Indra, he got really angry with him. He said, yeah, this guy Yayati is too, what do you think he is? Oh, he can make everybody live forever and nobody's going to hell. And I mean, feels like there's something in my stomach. So he called Cupid and he said, Cupid, Kamdeep, I want you to go throw some arrows at Yayati Maharaj, make him fall down. Yayati Maharaj was very much in love with his wife, and that's in our Bhagavatam. He was Krishna conscious, plus he was well fixed in his grihastha life, regulated sex life. So it's not like some yogi who's trying to be celibate, you know, sitting in some forest alone. You send some beautiful apsara and he's, oh. Yayati, you know, he was married to an apsara, basically, married to a heavenly damsel. And she was very beautiful and he was very happy in every respect, materially, spiritually. So Kamadeva was saying, it's not an easy job. It shows how one can, you see, there's a certain amount of protection if you're well situated in your grihastha ashram. In the Priyavrata Maharaj section of the Bhagavatam, it also states that when they're trying to convince Priyavrata to leave Brahmachari and get into Grihastha, which I'm not particularly promoting here, but that his father wanted him to be the king, so he had a motive. But Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu were encouraging him that you'll be protected. You see, if you practice Krishna consciousness as a Grihastha, then you'll be like in a fortress from Maya. So that was the kind of situation Yayati Maharaj had. He was like in a fortress, as they say. I was seeing this morning so many families, nice children. That's the point of we want all the ashrams to work successfully. Right. I mean, the brahmacharis have the particular mentality. We sannyasis, we have a particular mentality. Grihasthas have a totally different mentality in terms of how they're associating with their families. So they're allowed to be, they should be attached to their wife, should be attached to the husband. That's their protection, but not so much that they forget about Krishna. Like Prabhupada was asked Malati when she had little Saraswati, said, why do you want to give Krishna consciousness to your child? Something like that. Why do you take care of your child? And then she said, it's my duty. Prabhupada said, no. Because you love your child. Because you love your child, you want to give the best thing to your child. And the best thing is Krishna consciousness. There also, I was just somewhere recently where I observed this annaprasan and some of these different samskaras. Actually, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, we were discussing how the samskaras are important, and he said that in his some of his communities, they use these samskaras as big social events. They have it's a good excuse to get dressed up in your fancy saris and your good dhotis and have a feast for everyone. In India, annaprasana, people like mostly devotees come and say, please put some grain in my child's mouth, annaprasana. But there's actually a fire yagya, and then five times you have to put chanting mantras, feeling the five air of the lords over the five pranas. Om pranaya nama swaha. You say swaha, like offering to the fire of digestion. Upana, what's it called? Udanaya. All the five pranas. Samanaya. What's it? Udanaya, Samanaya. Upanaya. Like that. So they use that. They have a little ceremony. It takes about half hour. And then they have a big feast and a party. Festival, a little minute. Grihastha oriented festival. Prabhupada said everything. With childbirth for us, with families, it's all auspicious. Even if someone doesn't have children, with the husband, wife, sometimes they use that, they work together to help spread Krishna consciousness, to work as a team. Actually, when I was a new bhakta in Montreal, I was 19 years old and my temple president was a German, Hansadutta, and his wife Himavati. So Himavati was on a campaign to get all the brahmacharis married. She said, she was heavy preaching to me, if you want to go back to Godhead, you got to be married. And she said, I'm just a new bhakta, I'm 19, you know, I'm not thinking about it right now, you know. It wasn't on my priority list at that moment. I was just trying to become Krishna conscious. But she said, no, no. Look at how we come here. We're the temple president. We're preaching like this homily. Look at that. There was, at that time, there was a period when all the young couples, they went out and opened temples. It was the... But then later, there was something that happened that happens to couples, like babies. They made it a little more complicated to be the temple president. But at that period, they're all young. They didn't have children yet, so it was working. Then... I went to see Srila Prabhupada and I asked him that Himavati is preaching to me that I cannot be Krishna conscious unless I'm married. So what should I do? I'm just 19, I'm not thinking, I don't know yet, you know, what I should do, this new devotee. The Prabhupada said, you should wait till you're, normally people wait till they're 25. Then in consultation with the guru, between 25 and 30, we'll decide. So for now you have I got what they call, when sometimes the football match rains out and they put a postponement, they give you a rain check. They call it rain ticket. It means you can come back the next time free because the game didn't finish. And they have those in America for some sports. Now they have, of course, this covered dome. So. I had my rain check. I said, okay, till 25, I was free. So then she came, oh, no, Prabhupada said, wait till 25, then we'll decide. But like that, there were many couples at that time who were going out and preaching. In fact, I would say majority of our temple presidents are probably grihasthas. There's a few brahmacharis, a few ladies. But majority probably are grihasthas because it's to deal with so many different things. So like that. Of course, when I was 21, Prabhupada gave me sannyas, so that finished the whole issue. Probably the youngest sannyasi. Now I'm the oldest senior sannyasi, left. No, because the other were, I was number 11. When I got initiated, I was number 11. The first 10 before me are not sannyasi anymore, or they're not in ISKCON. So it's risky. Being a sannyasi, a bit risky. Especially in the West. I'm in India most of the time, so it's a little safer in India. But cause I was in 1970. Others like Trivikram Maharaj is pretty old sannyas. But they're after, 71, 70, like a few years after. What year are you, sannyas? 88, you're after the Prabhupada. But whichever way one wants to go, I mean, they can choose to be a brahmachari or stay in that ashram later, or they choose to be grihastha. But the idea is grihastha life also is very important that it be done in a proper way. Somewhere Prabhupada said in 8th canto we have to fight against Maya from the position where we feel stronger. For some people they may feel stronger just to be alone. Or they may feel stronger that to be together. So whichever way we are, that we try, we have to then fight against all these illusions of Maya. Unfortunately, we don't have a pious king like Prithu Maharaj who's there to support us. There's enough Maya in the material world. Sometime, are any of you ever tested by Maya? Once in a while. How many times per day? Per hour? Per minute? Constant fight with the mind. Eventually the mind becomes a little more favorable and attacks. But anytime she gets a chance, she'll attack. First to the senses, to the mind. So we want to focus ourselves to be Krishna conscious. Actually, Prabhupada mentioned most of Lord Chaitanya's followers were grihasthas. And when he took sannyas and he was in Jagannath Puri, there was a number of sannyasis there, and there was only one or two brahmacharis that were very prominent, like Suklambar Brahmachari. But most of everybody, like Srivas Thakur was grihastha, most of the devotees, Panchatat at one point or another, like everybody was a grihastha, but Prabhupada mentioned, I don't know much about Gadadhar being a grihastha, but Nityananda, but Prabhupada once mentioned in the class that Panchatattva, everybody was a grihastha. Only thing I don't know, I haven't read, but there was the custom in those days to marry everybody very young. So maybe when he was just a student. So for us, there's also a lot of grihasthas in these communities here. You need to be Krishna conscious, support each other, work as a team. Build up a good relationship. Don't say things to each other that affect for all devotees. We shouldn't say things that hurt the other devotees. We should try to build up a closer relationship. Especially husbands and wives. Once I was flying in Europe and I opened the Financial Times, I don't know why, so I just glanced through, and there was one article by a famous marriage counselor. I said, okay, I'll read it anyway because I have so many disciples that have problems. I see what. And the whole article was that criticism amongst couples should be constructive. Don't say destructive things. Constructive. And I mean, Prabhupada always told us constructive criticism in Krishna consciousness. Is that destructive is destructive to the relationship. Like if somebody says, you know, you're always late, I hate you, I don't love you, or things like that, then you're attacking your relationship. If you just say, you know, you should try to be on time, don't be late, this is important. Okay, that's constructive, right? You're not attacking your relationship, but don't. So that is a pretty important thing. That's even in our GBC meetings 1 year, we had Anuttama had us all do an exercise. Go up to some other GBC and tell them one nice thing, then a criticism, constructive criticism, and another nice thing. Even that constructive criticism should be sandwiched between two sweet things. It was very interesting. And after someone came up, maybe they don't like the way you chant your japas, I don't know, whatever they're. So, but at first they say, you know, you're a very dynamic preacher, or you're very good at this or that, something nice. Then they'd say their constructive criticism, then they again say something nice at the end. So you didn't feel bad, even though you were just criticized. So they use some of these are techniques that different management gurus teach, so somehow these are being promoted in ISKCON also. But that's something that Lord Chaitanya also said in Shikshastika, because he said that amanena manadena, give respect and don't expect respect. So, but sometimes you may have to give some advice also. So if you appreciate someone, then give the advice. Then it doesn't hurt you so. You don't take it that the person doesn't like you. That sometimes there are people that they're just out to get you, no matter what, you know. There's no nice things, it's just nasty things. But if someone says something nice, then okay, maybe it's like this kind of a balanced view. So in our personal relationships and our dealings as a community, we want to also try to encourage everybody to be Krishna conscious. We don't have a king like Pitamura. We have to do it ourselves. All of you have to encourage your brothers, your god brothers, god sisters, god cousin brothers and cousin sisters and everyone. So we got to be expert in how we deal. I know, like in the West, like in India, everybody knows eat with your right hand. That's like Indian custom. But like in the West, people don't know. So sometimes there's a new devotee and they're eating with the left hand, and then some temple commander type come up, "Hey, what are you doing? You're not to eat with the left hand! You and Maya!" And they're like completely shocked, you know. Like, what's the difference? Left hand, right hand, you know. I'm a left-handed. What's the difference, you know? They don't explain that. They just shout at them, you know. This is crazy religion. What's wrong? Left hand, right hand. That explained the whole background. So you gotta, you know, instead of being like heavy, when especially new people, sometimes bhaktas, they get completely blasted out for some thing. They know they're not innocent. They don't know. So how to present the things in a more tactful way. Because we're not Pitu, he can make a law, okay, everybody does this, and if you don't, you know, you're going to be in jail. You know, that was, he's a pundit, he had that power. So we just have to do it by being sweet and nice and convincing to our friends and our other spiritual companions. So please try to help everyone to be Krishna conscious, have nice Krishna conscious families, and those who are brahmacharis. Try to encourage each other also in your ashram. Like this, we can try to get as many devotees back to Godhead and as many of the public to become devotees. That maybe we'll inspire some. Actually, there's some sitting prime minister somewhere. I think he was in New Zealand or something. I forget now. Maybe it was in Slovenia. Somebody was a vegetarian. Was it Slovenia? Was it a president? He was a vegetarian. He's still the president? But he was at least vegetarian. You know, there's some nice people. In America, if the president, they invite him to a vegetarian meal, then all the, these people who are lobbyists, who put the pressure on the politicians to support their cause, those are called lobbyists. They go and lobby. They go and promote their, like promoters. And they did a huge pressure that the President of the United States, if he eats a vegetarian meal, it's a very bad sign. It'll hamper our cow slaughter business. They can't even eat a vegetarian meal. It's a one-day banquet, you know. Maybe we can combine with all the vegetarians and have one vegetarian day in the country where everybody tries to be a vegetarian. Actually, the Christian... some of the Christians, like Catholics, used to be almost vegetarian during Lent. Some would eat fish, but they wouldn't eat any meat for 40 days. And going to the Mardi Gras festival, this is called Fat Tuesday, Ash Wednesday starts the 40 days until the Easter. So the day before they have a big festival. In South America they call it Carnival. And here they call Mardi Gras, because French... 600,000 people go on the streets. It's a real wild bash. And we're part of a parade, and we get everybody to chant Hare Krishna because they're in a really good mood, and they raise their hands and chant. So it's unique to see Americans and a lot of tourists chanting Hare Krishna. So every 3 years I go. But the idea is that they're having this big festival because historically, hundreds of years ago, the day after, from Ash Wednesday, everybody's no drinking, no meat eating, heavy Lent tapasya. I won't say like Ramzan, but because there they do everything at night, but not during the day. This was 40 days, nothing. Maybe I heard sometime they take fish. The fish were considered not so bad. So there's this... was almost, at least for some time, people were a little bit vegetarian, or almost. Like this, we can try to unite people. Anyway, thank you very much. Nice to be here again. Since we're going to have darshans, and I have to go in a few hours. Who wants to speak to me before I go? Any questions? Any comment, Maharaj? Got a mic here. Did you hear okay in the back there? The translation was all right? Let's give a big Hari Bol to the translator. And to the listeners. Where's the pin? Jack, we have a pin. Okay, never mind. Didi Ruma have it.
So, the question is like, there are actually two questions. Let us see if you like this question to answer in this form. What if Maharaji, a woman is married to a man who is nice but who is not yet a practicing devotee? They have a child, and the man is attached to his wife, and therefore it is very sad if the fourth regulative principle is insisted upon by his wife. What should his wife now do? The man wants one thing, physical contact. The wife wants to be initiated and knows no of this rule, no illicit sex. But if she would say no, if she would say no to the desires of her husband, the marriage is in grave danger. There is a child, and divorce is something which sometimes happens because of eating. So the question is, can this woman who is 10 years, let us say, who is really a good devotee, 10 years, 16 years around school, even out of book distribution, everything, can she sometimes, in order to save the marriage to her husband who is not there, submit to the desires of her husband?
That's question one or two.
This is the question number one.
Is that two? Or is it connected? Same thing?
Connected, yes. Now, in ISKCON, many marriages have divorced. I heard 75% was a statistic.
I don't think so. I heard 50, but I don't know.
Maybe 50. That's every second marriage. And maybe for married couples who have entered the ashram because they were a little desirous of the opposite gender, the standard of no illicit sex is a little bit too high. Therefore, there is tension because they can't follow this. So often grihasthas come to me and say, what do you? We read the GVC resolution on this question, but it seems very impractical for young, passionate people who to enter a celibate grihastha ashram, more or less celibate grihastha ashram. So they ask, what is about what is about a more mature handling of religious sex? That's the question. So first is the question of how that the husband is not he's nice, cultured, there's a child. The woman is
vegetarian, supportive, do your Krishna consciousness, no objection.
Yeah,
just give me my relationship. Give me love.
These are questions I believe they are very much in. You know that these questions.
Also. But I thought that GBC resolution answered this to some extent. The GBC resolution cited a letter from Prabhupada where Prabhupada said that this principle is to be more like a goal. Yeah. And there shouldn't be like depressed or discouraged if you're not able to fully follow it. But you should try to come up to this level. But it's not the end of the day if you are not able to fully come up to that. the idea is, I try to present it, that if you can practice just for having children, it's karma-free, it's devotional service. But if you're not able to, there's two other aspects. One is that Prabhupada said that if in some purport that being a grihastha brahmachari, I mean by practicing to having regulated that relation, that the vital fluids of the body are produced in enough quantity that if they had relation once in a month, it wouldn't deplete them physically to be able to understand spiritual things. If somebody's totally out of regulation and just having very frequently relation, then physically and mentally it drains their intelligence. So what's called is urdareta, that ojas is produced in the body, that ojas can go to the brain and give higher intelligence, or if it's it can be used to produce sperm and this other reproductive fluids. So that was the other thing, is that even if someone is a grihastha and they're having elation once a month, ideally for children, then if it's for children, then it's devotional service. If it's not for children, at least it's under some regulation and it's preserving their, to a large extent, their ability to understand spiritual things and not draining that out excessively. So I kind of have steps. One is completely following, which is devotional service, and then one is regulated, which is not so depleting on one. But I was also in a room once with Prabhupada. We had a unique case where some devotee, where some devotee had gone out and was visiting prostitutes in Mayapur. And he got caught. So they brought the devotee before Prabhupada and asked one of the co-directors, president, I was in the room. And then Prabhupada said, why are you going to prostitute? You're a married man. And he said, well, I can only have relation with my wife for children, but I don't want any more children, and I can't. I have these desires, so therefore I went out to a prostitute. And Prabhupada was like scratching his head, like, "What a strange logic, you know." And then he said, "But as a married man, it's not sinful to have a relation with your wife." It's not sinful. He said, it is not sinful. But to go to prostitutes is sinful. It may not, so that I see that one is that our highest standard is a pure devotional service, like a yogi level. And the other thing is, but to have relation, it's not a sinful thing amongst a couple. But if they have tumavi, maybe a spiritual obstacle, but it's not a sinful thing. Or maybe not very sinful, I don't know, but Prabhupada used the word, it's not sinful. I don't know, Prahlad Nanda Swami, everybody agree with me perfectly, and I debated this in the GBC also, that being the Minister of Congregational Development, obviously this is not a new question for me, this is something that we face every day. So what I had to do is just get people to be more responsible and... Once also Prabhupada married two girl disciples to two non-devotee vegetarian nice men. Couldn't find a husband for them. And Prabhupada was asked that, well, they're non-devotees. He said, women can be Krishna conscious under any condition. Don't tell me how, but you must have some. Because he didn't say men. He said women can be Krishna conscious. So you must have some special shakti. So to keep a marriage together, I consider these valid reasons. I don't consider that that the wife, to keep a marriage together, or husband, has to satisfy the basic desires of his partner, then his spouse, then it's a reasonable cause. Also, like if somebody had, say there was a young couple, maybe they're 35 years old, 32 or something, and the wife had, they don't even have a child, but then the wife had, say, cancer of the feminine parts, and then they had to take out everything, hysterectomy or whatever they call it, they take out because it was cancer and they had no choice according to their medical opinion. But they're not, so she can't have children anymore, but see, they're not also, they're too young to be totally celibate. And we don't allow polygamy in ISKCON, so what's the point? What's the choice? So then encourage them just to regulate. There are some gurus who, they're not so liberal, maybe, but because of the way that Prabhupada says, make it as a goal, that what happened with this, somehow keep the marriage together, don't visit prostitutes, don't have, that's like the really illicit sex. It's, there was a case I had where someone would do a self-abuse. They didn't go to prostitutes, but they thought it was also sinful to have, and so they're doing self-abuse. So Prabhupada said that that is four times more detrimental than having a normal sexual act. Four times more excretion or whatever. So it's more detrimental. So it encouraged that, try to work out something with your spouse and get yourself regulated, but don't do this thing. So a lot of different weird things come up to me. It's not, you know, it's, so I'm trying to be very practical. And then usually after some years, you know, when they get in their 40s and gradually, there's a certain risk factor. I think if you're able to follow strictly and do everything as devotional service, even if you died at that moment, you'd go back to Godhead. Maybe. There's a little bit of a, there's some risk factor that if someone's not doing the devotional service standard and they're having the, some extra relations. It's not a big sinful thing, but they're attached to the material world, maybe more attachment. So there's a little bit of a risk at that time if you were to leave your body, will you go back to Godhead or take birth again? That's the factor. But to keep the marriage together, to gradually, to get through that, of course Prabhupada once said that even if you're 70% Krishna conscious, you can still get back to Krishna. Whether that fits within the, how many other things they have. So, to be very, maybe I mean very technical today, but you know, when you're actually discussing with people, I also felt really bad once that I was too strict with someone and it discouraged them very much in their spiritual life. Maybe that, so it was a kind of a shock for me. So, like we don't want to be niyam agraha, Rupa Goswami says, where you just push a rule, even doesn't have any more good effect, or to be too loose that you don't follow any rules. So we're trying to be yogis, trying to control our senses, but different people have different levels that they're on. So how to get them from that level to the next level and get them to the highest level eventually. Whether someone, what it's up to each guru whether how much the mercy they want to give, whether they'll accept someone on a, who's on a particular level or not. But I have a kind of a line that they have to be above that, but it's not so etched in stone. It's not right at the top, it's not on the bottom, it's somewhere in the upper part. But they're a little more liberal if people are like half and half, because then it's not really in their control fully. I'm a sannyasi, I don't want to get into the gory details. I don't ask for any graphic descriptions of anything. But just the basic principles of what's going on, categorically, we can discuss.
Thank you.
Yes, it's Gadadhar Pran. Gorgadara. Gorgadara. I got the Gadadhar right.
I have one question connected.
This is your mother?
Yes.
She's saying that you're going to take her to India again sometime.
Yeah, fine. So, you said how, actually, one question connected this first one. Some years ago, one mature lady told me that this is a shame for all women. What is the percentage of the divorce rate in our life? And you mentioned how the system of pushing the law is not effective, actually. But at the same time, we are also missing in our society, in our community, some kind of, I would say, council of all the devotees who would give some, at least some social pressure for the devotees not to divorce. But the present moment I see that when you speak about this wrong, because some couples have approached me and my wife, there are some cases the devotees are asking help. Very often it doesn't happen. The devotees are just trying to fix the thing among themselves. It doesn't work, they just separate. But there is
there
no
tissue? Okay, first, the winner of the race. Asking, you're saying about social pressure, but you're also asking about support and help.
Yes.
So like in Chopati, which is a community that has maybe 3,000 devotees, I think, in the congregation, more or less, maybe, I don't know. Tell me when you're ready. So Prabhupada was upset about divorce, and he didn't want divorce, but then finally he said, well, whatever is allowed by your laws in your country, you know, do that. Like when you're in Rome, do as the Romans type logic. But then what he did is said that for people in the West, they can get married legally first. So at least we don't, somehow, I don't know why, but here in this part of the world, in the Balkans, and many people live together just as partners. But it's not a big deal to get married. It's not a big deal to get divorced. So why at least they could be married as a civil? And this living as a partner, that was never approved as a Krishna conscious option. But somehow here, let's try it out as a partner for a few years and then get married. The Prabhupada's option was get legally married, so at least we show a moral face to the society. Try it out for 1 year or more. And then if you really feel convinced that you're going to stay together for your whole life, you like it, you love each other, you work, then get the fire yajna. But after fire yajna, shouldn't be divorce. For any normal, unless the person goes out of Krishna consciousness or completes some, you know, totally intolerable. Not just because I don't love you anymore, or this time. There's always ups and downs. So that's one side. But then, Chaupati, they have different social support programs from the grihasthas. It's not from the temple as such. They have their own council of leading grihastha devotees. They give money to maintain the temple. They have a marriage counselor service where marriages that are in trouble, they give them counseling if they want it. It may be a grihastha's private thing. Nobody goes up and says, listen, I'm going to counsel you. You have to ask for the counseling. You have to want it. But then you're bringing someone else, and a counselor is someone who's someone who's trained in that. Like Kunteya, he's taking this training, counselor training. There are a lot of this there. It's available in ISKCON to get counselor training. I think Matsya Avatar has it. I'm not sure if he has it, but some there it's around. So you get some people to get the training. I took a 3-day crash course in counseling. I know I probably forgot most of it, but 3 days is not a long time. But just to get an idea about counseling, is a completely different thing than like you go to some spirit, your guru or someone. The guru could take, it was good for me because I could say I could take two modes. I could take counselor mode or I can take authority mode. Authority mode, you say, okay, do this, do that. You know, then it's like an order or something. Where counseling is where you want the people to find their own solution. And so then you do this, what they call proactive listening, empathic listening, and they have all this is like you hear the person, they say something, you ask them the question, you get that two couple to speak to each other, and it's an interesting, the different method, mediation, like a mediation. I didn't take the mediation role, but this counseling, something like a mediation, but a little more personal. So they have some devotees that actually know how to do it. Not devotees just going to go right away and say, you should do this, you're in Maya, you're that, you know. That's not counseling. Maybe that's taking the role as a guru. Maybe that's not what they need at that time, that's not what they want. If someone has to be trained to be a counselor. There should be in the community. Here you don't have 3,000, maybe you have 300 devotees. I don't know how many at least last night there was like 250. They must have, this is a weekday, not everybody came. So you can have like some devotees who are available to be counselors to help when people are having misunderstandings. We saw some in the training course, they showed how there's different techniques. One thing is they get them to express their problem, then they get them, okay, now you switch roles. You think that you're him and she thinks that he's you. And then try to see things from the other point of view. And then now you defend his case and he defend yours. It's like suddenly like they're only thinking from their side. They never thought that what is the other person feeling when I throw his Bhagavad Gita out the window or something. I don't know. Nothing that bad, whatever. Whatever they do, their problem is. So there's all kind of little techniques. So someone can go for a 1 week, 2 week training even, or crash course, 5 day training. At least they'll have a little bit of an idea. And if they can get a bigger course, a bigger training, then they could actually help to be counselors for the devotee. Counselor, not the, like the counselor system, but counselor in the sense of this type of problem resolution counselor. So that would be good. I mean, they also have